My chair keeps sliding away from the microphone. So,
did you? Is that the chair you put the rolly wheels on? The
yeah,
you replaced them.
It's too rolly.
But it's a lot quieter, right?
Yes.
How is it on the wood floors? Does it scuff it at all or anything like that? Because that's the problem I have, is my plastic wheels scuffs the wood floor underneath. So I got one of those plastic things down and I hate it.
It's they're very rubbery. It's a soft rubber. So I guess we've started the podcast then, haven't we? Hey, hello and welcome. Thanks for downloading the show. I appreciate you taking the time here. This is Garden Fork Radio. It's me, Eric. I have a YouTube channel, a podcast here. It's what I call eclectic backyard DIY stuff. We talk about cool, interesting stuff. Maybe you're listening to us in the car or you're at the gym or just walking around. I don't know, but welcome. Thank you. And good to have you here. So today, my buddy Will is here. Hey, sir.
How are you doing today?
I'm great. Are you in the closet like I told you to be?
Actually, it's actually interesting you say that. That's the best place to do podcasts. I never thought about it, but I thought getting the foam and everything. But if you just stand in your walk-in closet, you sound great.
Yeah, because there's all the cloth absorbs all the echoes.
Yeah. The last show I was standing out in the open, I didn't even realize it because I couldn't hear it on the microphone. But on the playback, wow, you could really hear the echo. So.
Yeah, we had a comment about that. So,
sorry about that, everybody.
I won't say who it was, but he's familiar to all of us.
I'll give Rick a call and tell him I'm sorry.
So we have a couple interesting things. We have an interesting viewer mail I wanted to read. We're going to talk about mushroom foraging, Will's canning of food, and what happened there. An article about honey smuggling, sent to us by a viewer, and who knows, we'll see if we have any new iTunes reviews. That would be a wonderful thing if we had that. So big hint, everybody. So here we go.
I believe now you can leave iTunes reviews in the app. There was a new update that just recently came out, and you can click the number of stars and there's a little spot where you can type in. So I think it's even easier now. You don't have to go to your computer. You can just do it right from your phone.
Oh, sweet. I will investigate that. But if someone knows something about that, perhaps Kevin, you could let us know. That would be great. Anyway, big hint there. So a while ago, I kind of stepped out of the DIY world because I was just concerned about the United States in general splitting apart. And I read a little statement about how the Russians are trying to divide us and get us to fight with each other. And Peter, a listener, sent an email, and the subject is "The Sowing of Fake News to Divide Us." Great job, Eric. You artfully presented this important message in a nonpartisan fashion. While some will not believe anything not gift-wrapped by their favorite propaganda outlet, those with open minds will hear you. Thanks for doing this. That's Peter, and he is in upstate New York. So that was nice to get a little feedback from that. I don't know how many people unsubscribed after I went political, but we'll see.
I thought you did a great job. I mean, a lot of times I try to stay disconnected from that, but it's kind of nice to get an update every once in a while. And I think you covered it fairly and you laid it out there, you know, in a great way.
Yeah, I don't care what side of the spectrum you're on, where I truthfully believe we are being played by outside actors. So, but there you go. All right. Let's move on to something much more garden forky, and that is mushroom hunting. I was actually out in the woods photographing mushrooms this weekend because we had a ton of rain, and I'll tell you what happened with me. But Will, why don't you tell me what your story is?
It's amazing how after a little rainstorm, a day or two later, the forest comes alive with all this growth that was just never there before, and mushrooms start coming out. One weekend, we were up on the property driving around on our four-wheelers, and all of a sudden, kind of out of the corner of my eye, I saw this bright orange item in the woods. And this time of year, everything is green and lush, and not to see this bright thing out of anywhere. So we drove over to investigate, and come to find out that we had chicken of the woods mushrooms on there. So I took some pictures and I posted it on the Garden Fork discussion group on Facebook, and a lot of people sent comments and messages about that type of mushroom. They hadn't seen something like that before, and it looks really out of place with everything being green. It's bright orange.
Yep.
But it was great.
It's sometimes called the fried chicken mushroom. Was it growing on the side of a tree?
Actually, it was on a log that was on the ground. So the log or the tree had fallen over and the leaves had fallen off, and it just was growing right out of the side of the bark.
Right. And it's almost like a shelf mushroom. It's kind of it's a little stiffer than some of the other mushrooms that I harvest. But people say if you cook that, it tastes like fried chicken.
It was great. I mean, we mixed it up with a little bit of veggies and just kind of had it as a side dish, and it turned out wonderful. You know, you have to eat it right away. This isn't something where you can pick it and leave it in the fridge for a week or two, or leave it out in the woods for a couple of weeks and come back, because 2 weeks later when we went back, basically it was all shriveled up and gone. You have to take care of it now. You have to harvest it and then cook it right away.
A lot of times when we go out in the woods, I will throw a serrated bread knife or serrated steak knife into my pocket and a big paper bag, because that's the serrated knife is a great way to cleanly cut the mushroom off of whatever it's growing on. That way you're not damaging what is essentially most of the mushroom plant, which is in the tree log or in the ground. It allows you to make a nice clean cut so that part of the mushroom could grow again. It's essentially flowering. We're eating, I'm simplifying this, but it's basically the flower of the plant is what we're eating when we eat mushrooms. And then on a paper bag, it's great because it keeps them moist still. And I'm not a big fan of plastic bags in mushrooms, so.
Actually, speaking of bags, in the book that I have, The Mushrooms of the Upper Midwest, one of the things that they actually recommend is putting the mushrooms into, you know, those laundry bags that are kind of mesh, that yep. are cotton material or whatever. Put them inside of there, and then as you're carrying them, the spores are falling out of the mushroom when it starts to flower, and it'll help propagate the mushroom.
Oh, excellent. I wonder if like an onion bag would help as well. I mean, it is plastic, but it's netting, you know, so the same kind of thing where as you're walking along and you're bouncing the mushrooms around in the bag, the spores are coming out and distributing. I don't know.
Yeah, actually, the one thing that they definitely say not to use, just like you said, was a plastic bag, because that traps in the moisture and it'll make the mushrooms very rubbery very quickly.
Yeah.
Versus the mesh bag where it allows it to breathe, and then a paper bag is a good, you know, backup style.
What we've had going on in our woods is that it rains, and then we have an abundance of oyster mushrooms, which are, I think, easily identifiable and are very edible. But the problem is the oyster mushrooms then flower or sprout or come out, and then it rains again. And so it waterlogs the mushrooms, and you can eat them, but it takes forever to cook the water out of them. And then at that point, they're really rubbery. So the ideal is to go out after it rains, but before it rains again. That's what we've been running into.
One item, and you said it just a second ago about identifying mushrooms. That was actually one of the questions that came up in the Garden Fork discussion group that Penny asked, was how do you know what mushrooms are safe to eat and which ones are not safe to eat? So maybe we should talk a little bit about that if people are interested in trying this out.
Well, I did, as usual, when I'm into something, I do a deep dive into it. And I probably have 6 mushroom identification books, but I would get 2 different mushroom ID books. I'll link in the show notes of our show here the 2 that I really like. More pictures the better, I think, and more pictures of the mushrooms in a real world situation. Some mushroom books just have pictures of mushrooms on white paper or something, and that doesn't tell me what they look like in the wild. The other thing is to go along with somebody who already knows what they're doing. You can find someone in your neighborhood that is a mushroom forager and knows what grows in your area. I was lucky that the next town over, their conservation group had some mycologists from the Connecticut Mycology Association come on a walk in one of their properties that they have, the land has been conserved. They have these trails through it. And we found all sorts of things. And some of them, they're like, oh, well, this one's edible, but you have to boil it first and then dry it. And I'm like, that's not worth it for me. But there are, in our area, we have oysters and we also have coral mushrooms, which are very easily identifiable. But I do think going along with somebody else, I mean, the pictures help and the books will say, you know, reference it in two or three places and do a spore print. I just know there are four different edible mushrooms that I know what they look like in my town. There's the fried chicken mushroom. There's maitakes, or called hen of the woods. There's oysters. And then there's something else. Oh, the coral mushrooms, which are sometimes called a bear tooth mushroom, hound's tooth mushroom. But yeah, how do you do it, Will?
Well, actually, to jump you up to the 21st century, there's now an app on your phone that you can get that actually is really good for identifying mushrooms. It asks you a couple of questions.
Oh, there you go.
I think it's called like Nature's Forager. And basically, when you're out in the woods, it'll say, is it growing on the ground or is it growing on a tree? Okay, what color is it? You pick the color. Does it have pores or does it have gills? You know, does it have a stem or no? And by doing this, it's basically process of elimination. That, and it knows where you're standing because of your location. So it'll know what grows in your area. Like certain mushrooms grow in Wisconsin versus certain mushrooms that grow, let's say, in Michigan or in, you know, Texas or something like that. So based on where you're located, it helps narrow it down a little bit to give you, one, what the mushroom is. But then the other thing is it also tells you what the false positive is, which is basically, you know, a mushroom that looks like another mushroom to make sure that you're not picking the wrong one.
Oh, I've run into that. Yeah. What's the app name again?
Nature's Forager.
I'm putting that in the notes right now. And other people are writing it down. All right, cool.
There's another one called Nature Mobile, and it's a mushroom app. I think it's 99 cents to buy it or something like that, but it's kind of a neat app because you can take pictures of it and you can log where you were when you found them, because that's a big thing is certain mushrooms only come out at certain times of the year. Example, morels only come out in the springtime for a very short period of time. Hen of the woods is a very short period of time in the summer to early fall, you know, so you have to kind of know when they come out, and you can, if you harvest them correctly and leave some behind, that the next year, if everything comes out right, you can go back to that same location and harvest it again year after year after year.
So you can set like a waypoint and navigate back to that waypoint the next year.
Exactly.
Wow. Yeah, I know. Basically, if you see mushrooms growing on a tree, that tree is either dying or it's dead. I have a sugar maple behind my garage that is still, the leaves still come out on it, but the bottom third is full of little shelf mushrooms. And I'm like, okay, I got to drop that thing because it's going to fall on my garage otherwise. But mushrooms are a great thing. But if you see them growing on a live tree, that is a sign that the tree is in distress and is dying from the inside out, basically.
One other item, and I read this in the same the book I think I have. It's called The Upper Midwest Guide to Mushrooms. It said if you find mushrooms in the woods, most likely the atmosphere and the soil type and the moisture level is right that there'll be other mushrooms. So let's say you're walking through the woods and you see some mushrooms growing on a tree, but they're not the type you're looking for. Look in that same area because most likely the ones you are looking for are going to be close to other mushrooms.
Yeah, they, you know, mushrooms love a party.
Exactly.
It's kind of funny because now I, even though my eyesight is failing, I'm pretty good at noticing mushrooms out of the corner of my eye. There was a beech tree that fell last year. And the oyster mushrooms, you know, parasitized it. And the bark is still on this thing, but there was like a 3 foot wide shelf of oysters just plowing out of this thing. And unfortunately, it had rained a second time before I got there, but that would have been a delicious meal there. I don't take all the mushrooms. I leave a third of them so that their spore can go around, you know, can be released and make more mushrooms for us.
One item also on that same point about not harvesting all the mushrooms is try not to disturb the area where they are. Because I'll give you an example. We had a great tree that had oyster mushrooms growing on it. And over the wintertime, that tree had fallen over. Well, once it fell over and it was finally on the ground, we never got oyster mushrooms out of that tree again. For whatever reason, the habitat just changed enough that the mushrooms wouldn't grow on that tree. So when you're out harvesting mushrooms or foraging, try not to disturb the areas where you're going very drastically, and then they should be there season to season.
So don't drive your quad over the mushroom patch.
Probably not a good idea. Have you done that before?
No, I'm guessing? You're the one that said you were driving your quad around in the woods.
I've not run over any mushrooms, but I did. I think I said this on another show. I ran over and destroyed a whole patch of ramps one season when we were clearing a trail.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah, that crushed me, but that's okay. So
I'm sorry.
I just wanted to take a minute to thank our long-term patrons. All that information is on our Patreon page. It's a way that you can support Garden Fork in an ongoing manner, kind of like PBS or NPR, where you pledge X number of dollars a month. You can pledge a dollar a month or any dollar amount above there. A couple people did some kind of big dollars recently, which I was kind of blown away by. But, you know, it's kind of like a cup of coffee a month for Garden Fork. Most people do $3 a month, which is $36 a year, roughly. And that's what, that's like a magazine subscription. So I just wanted to start thanking everybody because other podcasts do that. I should probably thank my patrons, right? And I thought I'd start with the longest supporters and work toward the most newest ones. That's great word mangling, Eric. All right, so let's go, huh? What do you start? Joe C. from Norway, Maine. Kyle B. from St. Paul, Minnesota. John A. from Knoxville, Tennessee. Robert T. from Centennial, Colorado. Chris S. from Bismarck, North Dakota. Daniel D. he knows who he is. I think he's in Mexico City right now. Kenny B. I don't know where he is from. Murig F. I'm always ruining your name. I'm sorry. Who's in London? Mary B. I don't have an address. I'm sorry, Mary. Mary G. from Oswego, New York. Oh, there's a Rick Kennerly from Virginia. I wonder who that is. Laust, who is from Copenhagen. Pretty cool. Frederic, who's from Alberta, Canada. Sarah C. from Brooklyn, New York, who is my neighbor. Great person. Johan from El Dorado Springs, Missouri. Lisa from Liamsville, I think it is, Maryland. Scott G. from Canada, who is our resident agronomist. Scott Gillespie, thank you. Paul N. from Atlanta, Georgia. Georgia C. from Morgan, Vermont. Teresa A. from Livingston, Montana. Donaldson B. from Brooklyn, New York. Longtime supporter of Garden Fork and also excellent cook. William Breuer from Wasilla, Alaska. Pretty cool. Isabel from Holy Cross, Iowa. Howard T. from Mount Lake Terrace, Washington. David H., also from Wasilla, Alaska. Julia M. from Portland, Oregon. Tracy R. from Montreal. I see her on Instagram. Gary R. from Henderson, Nevada. Lindsay from Sydney, Australia. Very cool. Jerry W. from Greenville, Ohio. Dorothy K. from Hamilton, New Jersey. Heidi B. from Medford, Oregon. The Root Simple podcast supports us from Los Angeles. Claire W. from Roebling, New Jersey. Leda M. from Jerusalem. We know who that is, a foraging expert. Catherine C. from British Columbia, long-term supporter of Garden Fork, also a friend of mine on Instagram. William L. from Milford, Connecticut. Michelle A. from Fieldale, Virginia, very active on our Facebook page. Tim H. from Hanford, California. Sean Wiley from Oak Park, Illinois. And Jonathan G. So that's our supporters for the moment. Actually, no, we have more. I'll read the second part of the list upcoming soon. Thank you, Patreon supporters. More information about that in the show notes or go to patreon.com/gardenfork. So we were talking the other day about canning. Was this your first time canning vegetables?
Actually, it's my first time in a long time. We used to do it pretty regularly, and then for whatever reason, we hadn't done it the last two seasons. But we decided this year we were going to make pickles, and if it could go wrong, it went wrong. It just went wrong for us. We still got 17 jars, but we probably should have had closer to like 22. So I lost five of them in the process.
And was there a red flag? Did you realize afterward what you were doing wrong, or?
Some of them are easy to discover. Others weren't. Like, give you an example. So you pack the jars, you sterilize them, you pack them with the what you're going to put in there, and you put the lid on, and you tighten it down. And then we put them into the bath, and I set five of them into the bath, and I lowered it down into the hot water bath. That's what you do with the version of canning that we're using. We're not using a pressure cooker, but we're using the water bath. And I set the jars down in, and I immediately heard this clinking sound. It just went clink, like. And it was a really odd sound. And I waited a couple seconds, and all of a sudden, all these pickles started to float to the top of the the water. And I'm like, what is going on here? So I lifted it up and picked it out. And in the process of picking out the jars, four of them were okay. One of them, it actually had a split in it, and it went right around the jar perfectly, like you would have perfectly cut it with a saw. And the whole bottom of it just basically popped off.
Wow, I wonder if that was an imperfection in the jar or the way it sat in the ring. Maybe it had a very slight scratch in it or something.
I did some reading online, and one of the things that they stated was if your jar wasn't hot when you packed it,
there you go,
and then it was you put it in there and it was a little cooler, all of a sudden you can have some expansion and that can cause cracks. I did a little research online to figure that out, so I had that problem. Another batch, I put the jars in, and when they were done boiling, you lift them out of the frame, and I looked at them, and all of the tops of basically one jar was perfectly fine. The other four, it looked like you had folded the top. It basically, I don't want to say kinked, but basically folded itself to the point where when I picked it up, all the liquid started kind of running out of the side of it. And I realized as it was sitting there boiling, the water from the boil was getting into the jar and basically rinsing out everything. So had to ditch all four of those also. It just one thing after another like that kind of happened. And it was an interesting learning experience about, those jars. I'm guessing I probably tightened the ring too tight on, and then it caused it to buckle in the middle.
Right. Because when you put it, I am an amateur canner. Okay. So if you have if I'm way off here, please let me know. radio@gardenfork.tv. But my understanding is that you put on the canning lid, and then you put the band on there, and you don't cinch it down. You just make it not even like super hand tight, because some of the air that is in the jar is going to escape under the seal.
Exactly.
And then when you pull it out, the contents cool off. The air gap that's in there, the atoms aren't moving around as fast, so that air gap shrinks and pulls the lid down tighter. And that's your canning lid is now vacuum. You vacuum sealed that jar of pickles is what you're doing.
The biggest thing I learned, I'd have to say, is don't be in a hurry. I was trying to finish this up, and we're trying to get the kids to bed and kind of doing it quickly. And I just, okay, here, I'll just tighten these on. And I tightened them on there, and I must have, like you said, tightened them too tight, and that was it. So if you ever have to can, don't can in a hurry is probably my other point, is check your jars before you put the stuff in there. Otherwise, you lose a lot of material. I mean, we lost probably at least 2 dozen, 3 dozen cucumbers out of the process. And, you had to clean them and pack them and get all the other stuff ready to put them together. And it was wasted at the end because I hurried.
The other thing is that the rim of the jar has to be immaculate. So what I do is I preheat the jars in the microwave. I take four jars and I throw them in the microwave, and I hit it for like a minute or two. And I just get them really warm. So when they get into the canning water, they don't crack. I also make sure that the rim of the canning jars is immaculate. And I use a paper towel for that, not a sponge, because your sponge is actually the dirtiest thing in your kitchen. So you don't want to do that.
Yeah, throw your sponges out right now if you can.
I bleach my sponges every week. So
We just don't have them in the house. It just always seem to, it feels like you're just smearing whatever the last thing you wiped up over the top of something else.
Yeah.
There's
some people yelling back at the podcast right now.
So. Sorry, everyone.
But you did have some, you sound like you had like a 70% success rate there.
Yeah, actually, we tried them out, and actually the bread and butter ones were phenomenal. I mean, it was a really simple recipe, just mix a couple things together. We threw a little bit of other stuff in there, some onions and carrots and that kind of stuff, and they turned out great. It just, I kind of learned my lesson. You can't hurry the part getting ready, and you can't hurry the part when you're trying to finish it, and they'll turn out great. So it was good.
That kind of sounds like a life lesson there, Will.
It is. That's what Garden Fork is, though. You know, everything's not perfect.
We could apply this to everything. Don't hurry. There is several canning and pickling videos on Garden Fork's YouTube channel. I'll link to one of my favorites. I love bread and butter pickles. Actually, I'm not a big fan of pickles unless they have sugar in them, because I like sweet better than sour. But some of my friends like sour. And I wonder if that's a kind of a hint about their personality.
Possibly. Do you ever do apples? I know that you guys have apple trees. Do you ever do apples, applesauce in the fall or anything like that?
We used to. We're having a big problem with our apple trees. They have some sort of a disease or fungus that all four of them lose their leaves in the middle of summer. And we were told that we have to rake up all the leaves and dispose of them for several years of trying to eliminate this. And the apple trees are in amongst other plants and stuff, so I can't get all the leaves up. So, you know, they're in with hostas and shrubs, and but they're not. This is why orchards have grass around all the trees, is so they can suck up all the leaves.
That's what we do. We read that online, that you shouldn't leave the leaves underneath your apple trees at any point in time, because they can harbor fungus and things like that can poison a tree over winter. And then in the springtime, it kind of blooms. And by the middle of summer, you know, you have the problem that you're having.
Yeah, I have one of my apple trees will be coming, a new one. It's about 8 foot high, will be coming down this fall. So, yikes.
Save the wood so you can do it in your smoker or do it in your grill for smoking.
Yeah. I got I get emails from, hold on, I thought I was prepared, and now I'm trying to tab through. Oh, here we go, from Nicole. Nicole sends me emails almost every week. There is a website called Quartz, and you can go to it by, it's QZ.com. It's called Quartz, and they have a lot of in-depth articles. And one of them was all about bees and honey. And a lot of it is stuff that we already know about how we're losing our pollinators and how old beekeeping is, how many plants need bees as pollinators. But I don't know if everyone's known about this. Rick and I talked about this a while ago, but there's a thing called honey laundering, much like extra virgin olive oil can be not what you're buying. The same thing with honey. It says honey laundering is the practice of importing China produced honey, which is often watered down with corn syrup or sugar water. Chinese honey is banned in the US. Producers get around it by having it shipped to another country, relabeled, and sent to the US as a product of the middleman. It's illegal, of course, and the government's cracking down. So they have, some people have been prosecuted for this, but basically the gist of that is, if you're buying it at the grocery store and it's crystal clear, immaculate honey, it may not be what you think it is. I also know that there is a level of corn syrup that U.S. honey is allowed to contain on a commercial level. So if you just get it from your local producer, you're helping preserve open space in your area, and you're helping a local farmer stay in business, right? Well,
have you looked at any of the statistics that they have on this website? That's amazing.
Yeah, yeah. Read some off, sir.
1.1 billion pounds of honey are produced in China every year. That's crazy. Let's hear what else they got. 60 to 100 pounds of honey are produced in a beehive annually. 2 million flowers must be collected for nectar to produce one single pound of honey. I mean, that's crazy.
Yeah, the bees are just booming in the middle of summer. We had quite a good year with our honey production. I actually, tomorrow or Thursday, I'll be pulling a second set of honey supers off our hives. And I'm trying to make this kind of epic urban honeybee harvest video. It won't be out for a while because I'm still shooting more footage. But I went and shot the opening of it, and I had to go up to, I'll give you a hint, I went up to LaGuardia Airport to shoot the opening of the video.
Here's a question for you. Have you, can we geek out about beekeeping just for a second?
Yeah, because you're interning with a beekeeper.
I am. And I had a call you the other day, and I thought we should share this story because everybody talks about the great parts of beekeeping. And this is a good story. It's just not, it's kind of one of those things you don't think about. But we were working on a hive out on the property, and it was probably my fourth or fifth time out working on them. And we were putting some supers on and moving some things around. And there's one hive that just, it's easily agitated. You know, you do stuff to it and the bees just pour out and they fly around you and everything else.
They bonk you.
Yeah. And like you could lift your arms and hands up in the air and then move them up and down. And basically you would feel the bees, you know, just you'd bump into a bunch of them. You just boom, 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 as you're moving your hands up and down. So we walked away and we walked probably a good, I don't want to say quarter mile away from the, but to the other side of the hayfield, and they were still on us and we couldn't get rid of them. And I had my pickup truck parked down by the edge of the road, and the guy that I'm doing the internship with, he goes, let's get in your truck. We're going to drive down the road. I'm like, what do you mean? He's like, just roll down the windows in your truck, hop in, and we're going to drive. So we get in the truck, and there's bees inside the truck, and we get in with our bee suits on, start the truck, turn the air conditioning on, and basically drive up and down the road until all the bees basically fly out the window, and then we let them sit for probably about an hour. Then we went back and finished what we were doing. But I would have never thought that I'd be in a bee suit with another beekeeper with bees inside of my truck driving down the road. The neighbors were looking at us like, what are these guys doing? But nobody ever talks about how to get rid of the bees, you know?
That's a performance art piece. Yeah, did they crawl along the windshield a lot?
They actually would land on the dashboard up by the air conditioning, and then when they'd fly up, the air conditioner would kind of right out the window and they'd go. So
oh, good.
But they were definitely swarming inside of the vehicle. It was the strangest thing that I've ever experienced, to be quite honest with you, in a long time.
It's rare that that happens. I mean, that's kind of like the cartoon version of bees, you know, all swarming out to attack somebody, which is really incorrect. But yeah, yeah, that kind of happens sometimes. We were putting bees in some new hives. It's called hiving a package. You have the package bees, and all of a sudden it started to rain. This thunderstorm came out of nowhere. So these bees are flying all over the place, and I made the biggest mistake of parking my pickup truck next to the hives with the windows open. And so when it started to rain and these bees are, we're trying to get them out of the package and into the hive, they instead flew into my truck.
How long did you have to wait till they all got out of there? Or
we
was
just
it
drove
like
the
a
truck,
week later?
We drove the truck around.
Why are there never any beekeeping videos like this? Because I'm guessing at some point in time you've been on the roof, let's say in Brooklyn or something like that. You don't have a vehicle to get in. You don't have pine trees to walk through or any of the tricks to kind of get rid of the bees when they kind of start doing that to you if it ever does happen. What do you do in that situation?
I crawl down the roof hatch. I wait a little bit. I face away from the bees. And then I slowly move down the roof hatch, kind of like an astronaut, you know, crawling back into the lunar module. When you're going down a shaft, essentially, and it looks kind of dark compared to the bright sunlight, and bees fly up usually. So if you're going down the ladder back into the house, into the building, they see sunlight up above and there's darkness all around. Well, relative darkness. I mean, you're basically in a closet with a ladder. They usually fly up. Occasionally, they're still in the hallway of the common hallway of the building, and you're like, I can't do anything about it. And they start bonking the skylight, and sometimes we can sweep them out, but a couple of them might perish, you know?
It happens sometimes. I accidentally set one of the supers down, and I didn't sweep the edge of it very well, and a couple of them got squished in the process. But it happens. You can't prevent all of it, but you try to do your best to make sure that doesn't happen, but sometimes it does.
Yeah, it's pretty interesting. So far this year has been good. But we'll link to the article here. It's qz.com, and it's you can subscribe to this. It's called The Quartz Obsession, which is their, I don't know, it's a daily or weekly email. It's very good.
Did you know that 400 million pounds of honey are consumed by people in the United States every year, according to this website?
Huh.
That's a lot.
Yeah, yeah. Do you shop on Amazon? I shop locally and also on Amazon and other online stores. If I need something very specific, like seat covers for the new used car we just bought, I will go online and sometimes use Amazon. And Garden Fork happens to have a dedicated shopping page on the Amazon site now, which is very cool. It is an affiliate linked page. We do get a finder's fee for anything that you buy when you start shopping from that page. But I list there interesting items that I think are worthy of the Garden Fork DIY person. It's amazon.com/shop/gardenfork. If you would start your Amazon shopping experience, no matter what you're looking for on Amazon, start it at Garden Fork, and that would be great. It's amazon.com/shop/gardenfork. That's amazon.com/shop/gardenfork. So I'm wondering if anyone has listened to the show and gone over and written an iTunes review. What do you think?
I say yes. That's my bet.
All right.
I haven't checked it, though.
Karma is boomerang. Did we read RB Hill 66's review, Pizza Oven? Let's read this one first. We have two. Ding, ding, ding. One from August 3rd, RB Hill 66. I really enjoy the broad range of topics. I didn't want to put out the kind of money to have a contract to build a brick oven. After listening to your podcast, I decided to do it myself. Now we have family nights making pizza and memories. I would never have attempted to do this without your done is better than perfect motto. Thanks for years of listening. I'll try to send pics. Richard from Southern Ohio. Yeah, Richard, radio@gardenfork.tv. I would love that. Yeah.
How many pizza ovens do you think, I don't want to say inspired, but I know that there's a lot of people out there. I've seen some of the pictures. How many pizza ovens do you know of that have been built, like the brick ones or the Adobe ones or any of those from the different ones you've done?
I have at least 20 photos from people.
Wow.
So
isn't that amazing?
Yeah. Farmer Scott R. So enjoyable. This is from August 2nd. I truly enjoy the conversations had on this podcast. I travel 45 minutes to work. It's always a joy to turn my brain off and think of something else than work, other than work and driving. Always learning something. Thanks, Eric. Nice. We were curious. Will and I were talking about whether the show should be 30 minutes or 45 minutes. If you have any thoughts on that, we'd love to hear from you about that. And then the newest one is from HeimPC, H-E-I-M-P-C, from August 12th. Love Garden Fork Radio 5 stars. I love Garden Fork Radio podcasts. Eric has a variety of interesting topics and guests in every episode. I never have to worry about the content if my grandkids are around and I learn something every week. Anyone interested in gardening, cooking, DIY should listen to Garden Fork Radio. Yay.
That's awesome.
We are a kid-friendly show. There's a number of people that have written the same that they appreciate that we don't drop words, bad words. And keep it family friendly content.
That's actually one of the reasons why I started watching it back in the day. You know, our youngest son Cameron was really, he wasn't into Bob the Builder or, you know, the Power Rangers or anything like that. He wanted to watch the Labradors on the videos and see, you know, what you were doing. If I have to watch, you know, back in the day, I think you came out with that video where you cleaned off the lenses on your car.
Yeah.
Or you polished them up or whatever. I think I've seen that thing probably at least 30 times, you know.
That's one of my most watched videos.
Well, we're one of the reasons, so.
That's great. It's, there actually is a channel of Garden Fork Labrador videos. If you just type in Garden Fork Labs on YouTube, I'll link to it in the show notes here as well. But I've got, there's like 20 videos up there and people watch them. So it makes everybody happy. So, So there you go. I think we're done with the show. What do you think?
I think we're good. I feel good.
Yeah. I'm having to wallpaper for the first time this week and I'm putting it off, but I might start that tomorrow. We'll see what happens.
One quick one before you go.
Yeah.
Plans for the weekend? big projects, anything?
It's kind of a blur. We had to go to a wedding this weekend, so my brain is still fried from that. Traveling really knocks it out of me. It just kind of takes me out of my rhythm. So, but a shout out to a couple of people in Lancaster, Pennsylvania. I was actually in a coffee shop, a cafe called Prince Street Cafe in downtown Lancaster at 6:30 on a Sunday morning. And someone came up to me and said, "Are you Eric from Garden Fork?" What are the chances?
You're that guy.
And her name is Sarah. And she said, "I wasn't quite sure it was you. And then I heard you talk and I knew it was you." And she said, "My boyfriend, Mike, is obsessed with you." I was like, all right. So I'm going to email Sarah and maybe Sarah and Mike could be on the show, because I was in Lancaster and it's a really great town. It's a big, small town, or small, big town, has two universities, very livable, and a vibrant food, seasonal farmer market kind of scene there. It was really nice. So there you go.
That is so cool. And that happens, isn't it? Just kind of, you know, the vacuum of YouTube, and I call it a vacuum because you post stuff and then you have to kind of wait for, you know, a response, or you don't know what kind of impact you're making. And then all of a sudden, when you meet the real people who are looking at your content or reading your blogs or watching your videos, all of a sudden, it's just this great feeling that, you know, you're making a difference.
Yeah, I'm trying. Oh, there is actually another iTunes review. It says, "I only wish the podcasts were longer," by B Latin from August 2nd. "I love Eric and his menagerie of guests. I turn to the archives for new listening when I run out of new podcasts. And Eric and Rick almost make me want to get a dog. I already got suckered into the tomatoes. Worth a listen." And Rescue 46. "I missed these. They were off my screen. Rescue 46. Great podcast. 5 stars. Keep up the great work." There you go.
Well, if people want to hear a longer podcast, radio@gardenfork.tv, send email to Eric and let him know what it works.
Yeah, because we can always talk more. So, but I am hungry for lunch, so.
Yes, I'm starving right now. So thanks for having me on. It's great.
All right. Thank you, everyone. Thanks for the iTunes reviews. Love to hear from you all. And go out and make it a great day. Garden Fork Radio's executive producer is Jimmy Gutz of hollowbooks.com. And our music is licensed from uniquetracks.com.